The federal government is back on a path towards stability. The Senate has passed the budget deal, and it's headed now to the desk of President Obama. That stability is a welcome development, too, for the contracting community. Ted Davies is president of Unisys Federal Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And, Ted, it's great to see you again. Last time we got together was at the GovCon Awards, and I'm happy to have you in the studio today.
Well, thanks for having me, Francis. It's good to see you again. Good to see you as always.
Thank you very much. The stability that we have in place now is, I mean, over the past half decade to decade, it's unprecedented. We know top lines now because President Obama has indicated he'll sign this deal for the rest of this fiscal year, and agencies will have a little bit more money to spend than they anticipated. And the top line for 2015 is in place now. So what does this mean for somebody in your shoes who's trying to plan strategy? I know you're kind of ripping things up and starting over, but more toward the good than the bad for the first time in a long time, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, Francis. One of the things you mentioned before is it's good for the contract community. I would say it's good for the government people as well. You know, the people I know in government have been extremely frustrated without being able to plan their agendas and get their strategic programs online. So I think there's a big sigh of relief in most of the agencies in addition to the government contracting community. And most of us, as we watched what happened in October, you know, made a lot of contingency plans, had to slow a lot of things down. You heard a lot of tough decisions around costs happening around town. But as we emerged from that, finally with an agreement, you know, later on in October, I think most of us started to hope positively for some midterm resolution. I don't think anybody expected on a grand bargain that was going to last for 10 years, but having something in place for 2 years is a very good thing. And I think we were starting to expect something like that might come out of it.
Mm-hmm. And I have maintained since the details of this deal first came out that this was about as grand as we were going to get. And in the context of what we've seen, it's pretty grand because a year and a half of top lines with the potential for regular order in 15 is 1,000 times better than a 3-week CR and a 3-week CR and a 3-week CR and a 6-month CR.
Isn't it amazing how everything is relative?
Yeah, that's
right. If you were here 5-8 years ago, you would have said, what? You're going to live on 3-week CRs. Forget
that's
it.
Stupid. Nobody would do that.
Right. A two-year deal sounds pretty grand right now. You're right.
What does that mean for your planning and strategy? Does it give you the certainty that it gives the agencies? Or do you still need more detail filled in before you can start to feel that confidence?
Well, certainly the appropriations bills have to get done. So it's really still a little bit unclear how some of the money that the Congress is now going to approve is going to get allocated. And that should happen, we hope, in January. You know, the agencies had already been planning on some level. Some of them will expect to get a little bit more. So I think the big impact there, though, is the base plans that they had, kind of the minimum amount of plans that were counting on the old sequester levels, mm-hmm. they can now move forward with those because I think they were even holding back on those. So now, as you said earlier, with a certainty, the acquisitions they want to do, the programs they want to beef up, the initiatives they have to take, they can all move forward with those. So that's good.
Was that holdback kind of a lesson learned from sequester before where the White House was telling agencies, don't worry, this isn't going to happen, it's too crazy, and then some agencies overspent and were way far behind by the time it actually hit?
Yeah, I think last fiscal year they took all the extraordinary measures they could to kind of take a different phrase, but, you know, and some bad things had to happen even at the end of the fiscal year, a lot of furloughs and some other things that were very unfavorable to government and contracting workforces. They kind of expended all those measures, and so they weren't going to get burned again, I don't think, and so many of them were holding back, expecting more sequestration-level funding. Now that, again, this has been released, they can do more to move forward.
What's the spread of your business like now among the various agencies, defense, civilian, and all of that?
The Unisys federal business is about half in civilian agencies, and the remainder is split between defense and homeland security.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our makeup.
So you're seeing this from both sides of the coin when it comes to how this is affecting the overall portfolio.
Yeah, we have. I would say in the past we've seen a bigger impact in defense mm-hmm. than probably the other agencies, and that may be just our positioning in some of the civilian agencies as well. But I think everybody was reading and knows that DOD was taking a pretty big hit in sequestration. They're going to get a little healthier through this, but they're not going to get fully healthy, so they're still going to have to make some tough decisions.
What are the customers that you deal with coming to your people and telling you that they need to move forward in this environment? Is it focuses on solutions, or is it more conceptual than that kind of thing?
I think it's still fairly conceptual. We know the programs that they want to do. Again, they haven't gotten all their funding yet. And I think one of the biggest issues they're going to have right now is between the programs and the acquisition workforce. You know, this is one of those things where the acquisition workforce in a normal year is fairly stretched. And, you know, when you get into now a very compressed cycle, the acquisition workforce is going to have to work closely with the program teams, and that's going to take a little bit of time. And you're going to inevitably run into your, you know, government fiscal year fourth quarter in the summer, and it's going to be a challenge for them this year.
Not a lot of July, August vacations this year, right?
I would imagine. They're doing their planning now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We've talked a lot on this program in the past couple of weeks about the state of the acquisition workforce at DOD in particular, and they're great people, and they're doing very difficult work. Number one, there aren't enough of them, mm-hmm. and number two, they don't have the training and the resources they need to execute as well as they'd like to. And everybody acknowledges that.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing that you're seeing at the civilian agencies too? Do we need a new generation of acquisition workforce people on the civilian side as well?
I would say generally, I'd agree that the problems you see in DOD are the same challenges they have on the civilian side. I think one of the things to add to what you just said is not only are they, you know, stressed and strained and in some cases need some more training, but they're buying new and different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the traditional, I'm going to go buy 100 FTEs, you know, to go accomplish something. I'm going to give you guys a requirement and you tell me how you're going to get it done. And some of it's going to rely on the cloud or some new delivery methods. And those are much more difficult contracts to structure mm-hmm. and then administer. So, it's not only a strain in normal times, but they're buying a lot of different things than they used to in different ways. And you got to think outside the box for some of that.
I am encouraged, I will say, that the thing that you and your colleagues have talked about with me in the past as being the sticking point for a lot of acquisitions, both inside DOD and out, mm-hmm. is the point of focus. Frank Kendall was on the program the other day talking about requirements.
Yep.
And the need to get requirements right, and then the need to be able to stick with them through the process.
Yep.
And not let them creep.
Absolutely.
Do you see that emphasis as well, and do you see that as being a potential way that agencies can come out ahead, given the budget times we're in, if you're not redoing and redoing and redoing?
Oh, I think well-defined requirements are a good thing. I think the other thing, and I think you and I may have touched on it in one of our earlier discussions, is that a discussion between the acquisition community and the contractor community is very, very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And in some agencies, they have good open dialogue, and that lets them refine their requirements and define their requirements in a way that industry can give them good solutions and help the government save money. And in other situations, you have maybe inexperienced contracting officers or pretty heavy regimes that really don't allow for that conversation. And that's been, you remember the 25-point plan that
sure.
Kundra came out with a few years ago. You know, one of those was a MythBuster campaign
uh-huh.
to get better communication. And when you see the communication happen, you see much better acquisitions.
Is that the main difference, though, is just the fact that those conversations take place where the agencies are more successful? Is that really the only element that's different?
I wouldn't say that's the only element, but, you know, I'd say also, and this is a bit of a concern that we're seeing, bigger disconnects between the contracting community and the program managers. So you have the program and mission folks having to get something done, and in some cases you're seeing the acquisition community say, tell me what you need, give me your requirements, and I'll figure out how to go get it for you. When in the past they might have had more collaboration on the right way to structure a contract, the right vehicles to use, the right people to invite to bid, the amount of dialogue that you have. And again, you need a really collaborative environment between acquisition and program people. And if that happens, you get good results. And if it doesn't, it's not as good.
What do you think is driving that? Maybe split's too strong a word, but it's kind of, as you're saying, you're seeing that doesn't happen as long. Disassociation, I guess, is more accurate.
Yeah, I think that one of the big drivers there is protests. You know, because of the environment we've been in with declining budgets and people protecting turf, as you know all the statistics, the protests are dramatically higher than they have in the past. And so contracting officers are protest averse. And mission people are all focused on delivering their mission.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those two goals don't align. And, you know, a lot of times when you see studies happening and recommendations being made, it's to really align the goals of the acquisition folks with the goals of the agency and the mission folks. And if they're aligned, you get better outcomes than if they're not aligned.
Well, and I can see where that lack of alignment would happen when one of the goals is to make an acquisition protest proof.
Absolutely.
And I hear that.
Yeah,
it,
yep.
It's not formal.
Yeah.
Nobody will say it
Absolutely.
Officially.
Yeah.
But you can kind of read between the lines in yep. a lot of these procurements,
yep.
can't you?
Yep. Yeah, you can. And people think it's all just about LPTA. And LPTA is definitely out there, and it's still a topic of discussion. But there's other ways to make sure you don't get protests. And I think that some contracting officers are definitely working in that direction. So it's a tough environment for us all to operate in when we do that.
Now, a lot of times throughout the history of this business, there have been these pendulum swings. And I wonder if when it comes to the protests and the tightness of the market, if potentially we're in a new normal, or if you think we might be at one end of a pendulum swing where in the next couple of years, as people realize, at least budget-wise, this is how it's going to be. Maybe it, I don't know, you can call it karma or you can call it whatever you want. Maybe it's not really a good idea to scrape for every single last penny. And maybe it's a good idea to just say, you know what, we lost this one. Maybe we shouldn't have, but we should just move on.
Yeah, I think the interesting issue in what you just said, I first of all, answer the question. I think the pendulum swing, we're getting out near the end on LPTA. I think it may swing back in the near term, and I don't know if that's next month or in the next year, but I do think this, you know, budget agreement helps give a little more stability. You know, in terms of the scraping for the last penny, I think the reason why it'll swing back is when agencies realize that even though you got the lowest price, you may end up spending more money in this structure than you would have if you picked the best solution, because there's other costs that come later. And I don't know of too many contracts that were awarded a certain value and were executed exactly at that value through the life of the contract, because there's other work that has to get done inevitably. And the LPTA, you know, winner, you know, will inevitably figure out ways to either add more work, or the government will get tied in to end up paying more for whatever reason, scope creep or paying for delays and everything else. So LPTA, while it may look like you're saving every penny, when you get to execution, I think you're going to find, and agencies find, that they spend more by picking not the best solution, but the quote-unquote lowest price solution.
It's that, you said it could be next month or next year or who knows when, but mm-hmm. that pendulum you think is swinging. Will there be a series of events that drive it, or will it just be a realization as agencies look and see what you are talking about, what you're predicting, that, hey, this didn't work out the way we expected it to?
I think as... You know, in any era, there are programs that succeed and programs that fail. You know, there's obviously a big one going on right now that's on the front page of the paper regularly. There's always going to be problem programs. I think where you're going to see the pendulum start to swing more rapidly is where you get a couple of those that are prominent and they were awarded via LPTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the one that's under a question at HHS today was not an LPTA procurement. But I think you'll find a couple coming up that you have big problems, they don't get delivered properly, and somebody looks back and say, well, it's because you did an LPTA procurement. And as I think everybody knows, there are very appropriate times to do LPTA. When you've got a well-defined requirement, when it's a commoditized piece of work that you need to get done, very appropriate times to use LPTA. But when you have complex services being delivered and you try and pick the low-price vendor, that's a tough place to be.
Ted Davies is president of Unisys Federal Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Ted Davies is president of Unisys Federal Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked a little bit, Ted, in the first part of our conversation about the kinds of things that agencies are coming to you with and some of the facts that they'll be able to execute on some projects that they've been wanting to work on for a while. What are some of the big priorities that you see agencies bringing you, that you anticipate agencies to bring you in the next 6 months to a year?
I think the move to the cloud is happening. And, you know, the move to the cloud has been discussed for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of fits and starts. But I think 2014-15, you're going to see a dramatic shift to the cloud.
Do we have a definition now? Do we all agree what the cloud is and what it means, though?
I think the easiest way for agencies that they talk about and think about it is, I used to have something in my data center, and now I don't care where it is. It could be my data center. It could be somebody else's data center. It could be in a commodity provider's data center. So I think I think agencies are going to find that there's dramatic cost savings and, in many cases, improvement in service that by not actually hosting and managing every bit of your data and your applications in your own data center.
I don't know if it matters, but are agencies going to move to the cloud in the next year or two willingly, or are they going to move kicking and screaming because they think they have to?
I think we're talking about burning platforms,
yeah.
Right? And you know, the burning platform is money. That even though they've got some more stability and they have money, they've got missions they've got to go accomplish, and the less they can spend on their infrastructure, the better. So I think it really frees up money to do other things. That's why they're going to go. I don't know that anybody's going to force them there from an agency leadership perspective, but I think they're going to see they save money by doing that.
And I guess from an executive perspective, looking back at the first part of our conversation about the fact that we at least should have actual appropriated bills, mm-hmm. They'll have financial flexibility to take that infrastructure money that they don't spend
absolutely.
And lay it right on mission, I would think, right?
Absolutely. And I think the agencies are going to want to spend it on mission, not mm-hmm. the infrastructure. I say that the money will force them there. It will take leadership. You know, in some cases, this is you have folks that are really comfortable the way things are done today. So it will take some leadership, but it's not like you're going to have an OMB, you know, beating on them and making them do it. I think the agencies will get it themselves. They'll find executive leadership in their agency to push it in the right direction.
The situation with the leadership issue, this is something that came up at an event that I moderated yesterday for a firm. We started out talking about IT, mm-hmm. and it came down to, as a lot of these conversations do, more broad managerial mm-hmm. Elements, like changing culture and bringing along a workforce that, as you mm-hmm. say, doesn't necessarily yep. want to do yep. What you want them to do, and how you sell benefits mm-hmm. to the end user and all those kinds of things. It strikes me that as we see this shift, not just in the procurement landscape, but also in the roles of a lot of these leaders, especially IT leaders mm-hmm. in government, that stuff, the soft skills, the things that you've learned mm-hmm. as the leader of a company, mm-hmm. motivating people and stuff like that will yep. become eminently more important than the technical skills.
I think absolutely. Leadership skills are going to be absolutely critical, and developing those leaders is going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really, as a taxpayer and a citizen, I also hated the shutdown and the furloughs last year, because I don't know how the government can attract top-level leadership if you got to operate in an environment like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that really concerns me about this whole situation.
What's the lay of the land for Unisys now and for companies like yours, talent-wise? Mm-hmm. There's a perception the economy's still not that great and there aren't jobs, but I keep hearing from people like you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I keep hearing from people like you, I can't find the right people mm-hmm. to do. I have plenty of jobs for people who are ready to do the things I need them to do. Is that your case too?
I think we continue to have plenty of open, we call them requisitions, where we're looking for great people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting shifts here is you have a company like Unisys, which is the majority of our companies outside the U.S. federal market, is, you know, can you get folks to come to federal or they want to work on commercial projects or work outside the area? And you heard some of the big contractors saying that during the shutdown, I'm going to lose my best talent. They're going to want to work on commercial projects.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw a little bit of that. I think, you know, there's a little bit of a risk there. But there are some good people still to be found. And the interesting thing is that I think the skill gaps are going to change. You know, back to the model that you have, you used to have folks that operated in their own data centers and they were used to doing that. You know, we're now becoming brokers of services. You know, I don't need to have, you know, huge data centers with dozens or hundreds of people operating. And I'm going to give that to somebody else to do, and I'm going to figure out the smartest way to get agencies there. So you need some different skill sets as well, and those are sometimes harder to find.
I wonder if you get much of a sense from your colleagues on the commercial side of the give you an indication of what the differences might be between the priorities that private sector companies mm-hmm. have now and the priorities in the federal space, because I know federal leaders like to learn from what's going on in the commercial side and vice versa.
Well, I think on the commercial side, it's mostly about top line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most companies today want to grow their business, and so they're looking for IT to enable, support that, and sometimes drive that. Obviously, you don't have a top-line issue in the federal market. It's about saving costs. So not that the commercial side doesn't want to save costs. They have to put solutions in place to save them money as well. But they do see a chunk of their IT go towards, you know, better customer interaction and towards sales support.
So the priorities sound like they're very similar, just kind of rejiggered for the federal market. I mean, it's customer service, citizen service, whatever you want to fill
different,
that blank
different mission.
In.
Yeah. Different mission, right?
Yeah, but kind of it's headed the same direction. So, so plenty of lessons to learn from one side.
Yeah,
to
one
the
of the things that I've talked about a couple times before is when everything crashed, so to speak, here in this market in 2009, and the budget started to become 3-week appropriations. We started going through a period with our customers and our clients that were, how do I save money? Well, that's what the commercial side had been going through, you know, from 2007, 2008. They were already going through that because of they were a little bit ahead of the federal market in terms of the fiscal crisis.
Ted Davies is the president of Unisys Federal Systems. You came in here from a meeting that you were at. Tell me what you're involved
with
there.
United Way of the National Capital Area. I'm the board chair there. And we had a board meeting this afternoon downtown. And it's a great organization. We hired a new CEO this year, Rosie Allen Herring's doing a great job. And having an impact with over 700 member organizations across the D.C. metro area. So very proud and happy with the work that we're doing.
What is it about the United Way that attracted you to it initially and led to you being on the board there?
I think initially I was attracted because the United Way is an umbrella organization. And it is uniquely positioned to pull together different interested parties to really solve problems. So it's not addressing one single issue with one single group. It allows the United Way to walk into a tough and complex environment, pull together and convene multiple stakeholders, and have a bigger impact than anybody could have on their own. So being able to orchestrate that was really exciting, and I've been happy to do that. I've been the chairman since July, and it's been an exciting time.
Oh, congratulations on that. Thank you very much for coming in today, and I wish you a lot of success in 2014.
Thanks, Francis. I've enjoyed talking with you, and you have great holiday season.